Jim Howard grows up on a farm near Tonica, Illinois. When his father sells the farm in 1925, Jim runs into an employment wanted ad in Hord's Dairyman. W.J. Dogan answers it, saying he needs a herdsman. His letter states there is no drinking or smoking on the farm, that he himself is deaf and a former minister. Jim doesn't drink or smoke and sees no problem in working under a minister farmer. He thinks privately it might be difficult to work for a deaf man, but he's willing to try. He writes he'll accept the job provided the Reverend Mr. Dogan will take a man with a severe limp. Osteomyelitis at age 5 has left him with one leg twisted and shorter than the other. But his handicap has never interfered with his ability to do a full day's work. W.J. writes back to come ahead. When Jim arrives, Mother Dogan gives him the room in the big house that has the little balcony. He meets the other hired men. Grandpa shows him the farm. He reads the words on the silo and wonders to himself whether the last aim, life as well as a living, is for the family only or includes the working man. He meets Ronald, who has just begun working full-time on the farm that summer, in business with his father. Ronald is a few years older than he and talks rapidly to his father by spelling out the words with his fingers. So does Mother Dogan. Jim pats his pocket. He's already purchased a little notebook and pencil to carry with him. After dinner, W.J. Dogan takes him into the office. "I never tell a man when to get up," he says. "I tell him when I want him on the job in the morning. You can get up an hour ahead, comb your hair, curl it, anything you want, or you can get up 5 minutes ahead. But I want you in the barn at 4 o'clock, ready to work." He tells him about his day off. "You can sleep as late as you wish and have breakfast here, but I want you to be gone part of the day. Get away from here, even if you have to go downtown and stand on a street corner. If you're away from here part of the time, you'll be a better man for me when you're back, and also for yourself." He twinkles. "But you won't have to stand on a corner. There are church activities, Grange activities, and I have a membership at the YMCA for every man here, so you can swim and play basketball." Jim nods. A day off every 7 or 8 days, even without Y privileges, seems very liberal. He's been used to having only one a month at his former job. Nor does the work schedule seem unreasonable. From 4 to 6:30 a.m., breakfast, then an hour's rest. Clean the barn and other chores till noon, then dinner and another hour off. Milking and cleanup from 3 till 6. Then supper and off for the evening, except for putting the cows to bed, though Jim doesn't know what putting the cows to bed entails. W.J. says, "These are my criteria for cleanliness," and tells of the spotless white cap and apron he is to wear at every milking, of how the cows are brushed and shaved and washed, of what the steps are in cleaning or washing down the sidewalls and gutters and spreading lime. He says that the walls are to be whitewashed regularly. Jim's salary will be $50 a month, including room and board. That, too, seems liberal. He knows that his employer has just returned from Chicago, where he gave a series of radio lectures over WLS and received a Master Farmer Award from Prairie Farmer magazine. He's a bit odd to be working for a Master Farmer and is filled with respect. He determines to do his best. The former herdsman stays on for a week to break in his successor, and then Jim is in charge. Not only does he respect W.J., Daddy, as he is called by everyone, but finds that Daddy Dogan treats him with respect. He never tells him, "No, you're doing that wrong. Do it this way." He never seems to be checking up on him. In the mornings, when Jim pushes the two-wheeled cart with its 4 cans of milk on it from the barn to the milk house and sees Daddy's head peeking from the small window of his bedroom in the big house, he never feels he's looking out to spot loiterers or count how many loads they are getting up. It's only Daddy surveying the world before emerging. When the weather gets cold enough for the cows to stay inside, W.J. instructs Jim on putting the cows to bed. At 9 or 9:30, the two return to the barn. The cows are all lying down. They've eaten. They've knocked hay out of their mangers. W.J. and Jim get them all up. They sweep the hay back into the mangers, get more hay. A lot of the cows, once on their feet, make droppings. Now all the manure falls into the gutter. They scrape the walkway, tidy up around each cow, and shake up her bedding. All the while, Grandpa croons to his lassies. He also talks to Jim. You'll be surprised at how much cleaner the cows are in the morning, and how much more they'll eat than if you just abandoned them from 6 o'clock at night till 4 the next day. He gives Jim other advice. As Mr. Horde says, the cow is a mother. Treat her as such. And every day go around in front of each cow. Watch how she eats. Look her in the eye. See if it's got a bright sparkle. It's losing luster. Then you know how that cow's feeling today. Go back around behind her. Look at her droppings. From then you'll know how she's going to be feeling tomorrow. Jim thinks everything Daddy tells him makes a lot of sense. He's also impressed with the routine of the big house. The meals are served in the dining room by Mother Dogan, Ronald's sister Esther, who is 15, and Hilda, the hired helper. The farmhands and Hilda eat with the family. Mother Dogan bakes all the bread, the pies, the cakes, and spreads a lavish board. Breakfast is never merely bacon and eggs, but bacon, eggs, hotcakes, sausage, toast, jam, applesauce, or another fruit sauce, fruit juice, milk, cream, coffee. Dinner's at noon. The table groans, even more than breakfast. Suppers are simpler, but equally satisfying. At meals, W.J. doesn't sit at the head, but in the middle of the table. He always says grace. After supper, he reads aloud from the Bible and from a commentary. The boarders stay for this lesson. Before bedtime, Jim habitually polishes off a quart of milk. The day-old milk returned from the route is in a box inside the cooler door and is free for the taking by the farm workers. As a boarder, Jim has his bed made every morning, and his sheets and clothes laundered weekly. Mother Dogan and Hilda toil over the big wash tubs in the men's washroom off the kitchen. In order to wash or to use the toilet in the closed room at the rear, he must thread his way around tubs and women, and in the wintertime, clotheslines laden with overalls. More lines are stretched in the cellar near the furnace, and sometimes he helps hang the clothes or carry a basket. In fair weather, the clothes are hung outside to flap in the sunshine between the elms on the big house lawn. For his rest period, he can stretch out on his bed in his room or sit in the men's parlor off the dining room, where the radio is tuned in to WLS, and there are magazines and books and papers to read. There's also a Victrola and records. Out in the barn, when short-handed, W.J. sometimes works along with him, taking the place of someone with a day off. Frequently, especially on Sunday afternoons, visitors from town come to see the milking. W.J. gives a mischievous glance at Jim, takes a cow leader, catches a cow through the nostrils, and exposes her gums. "This poor lass has no upper set of front teeth," he says. "She was born this way." The visitors cluck with surprise and sympathy. They don't know that all cows are born like this. Daddy Dogan doesn't give away the ruminant joke, nor do Jim or the other barn hands. Jim works a year on the farm. He and the other barn workers make a smooth team. Every year they scrape the barnyard. Every 3 months they whitewash the cow barn walls. Jim learns to swing all the way around the barn on the manure trolley track, hand over hand. Grandpa sees him and says, "Hi, I didn't know this was the big top." And then Jim leaves for an operation that improves his hip. He returns to a roommate. Glenn Guile acts a bit strange, tells wild stories, but Jim reasons that every man's entitled to his peculiarities. But Glenn's strangeness increases. He gets into his head that Mr. Griffiths, the oldest farmhand and trusted friend of Daddy Dogan, is losing his mind. Jim and the others laugh it off, but Jim feels uneasy. And then Glenn decides that it's Daddy Dogan who is going crazy. He states that Daddy has a lot of worries with the farm, and with his flirtatious, sweet 16 daughter, and with his harum-scarum college son, Trevor. Jim and the others laugh that off, too. But Jim feels uneasy. On a summer night, Jim and a milk house worker, Mickey Baker, are sitting on a bench in the washroom off the kitchen, idly talking of this and that. And Glenn comes in. "I'm going to shoot Daddy Dogan," he says casually, and trots up the back stairs, slamming the stairwell door behind him. Jim and Mickey are speechless. They hear the floor creak, and in a moment, Glenn returning down the stairs, one slow step at a time. The door opens a crack, they turn mesmerized and see 6 inches of shotgun barrel ease out. Panic grips Jim's throat, but with the panic comes action. He reaches up and grabs the light cord. In the sudden darkness, he and Mickey sprint toward the front of the house, snapping off lights as they go. They find Mother Dogan in the dining room. "Get Daddy out, quick," Jim orders. "Glenn's loco. He's coming with a shotgun to shoot him." Eunice asks no questions. She rushes to Wesson, who is working at his desk in the front room, spells that they must go over to Ron's place instantly. Wesson stumbles to his feet. "Is it a fire?" he cries. But he follows her out the front door, down the sidewalk to the little house. No one worries about Esther. She's staying the night with her chum, Eloise, down the road. Hilda is also away, visiting her sister. Jim and Mickey run to the cellar and hide behind the furnace. Overhead, they hear Glenn prowling back and forth in the empty house. "I've never hurt anyone in my life," chatters Mickey, clutching a coal shovel. "But if he comes down here, I'm going to kill him." Over at the little house, Wesson is hustled upstairs and into Mother and Daddy's bedroom. He sits in the dark. Vera calls the police. Ronald goes outside and listens to Glenn shooting up a cornfield. Then Glenn comes to the garage, starts his car, and leaves. The police arrive a few minutes later. They are provoked that Glenn has been allowed to get away. "How do you argue with a shotgun?" asks Ronald. "He'll probably come back. Then call us again," says the police. There's no sleep for anyone. Wesson, though he protests, remains in the dark in the uppermost corner of the little house. Eunice stays with him. Ronald and Vera watch at the darkened downstairs windows. Jim hasn't yet put the cows to bed. "Come with me, Mickey," he begs. "What if he comes back while I'm out in the barn alone?" But Mickey refuses to budge. Jim wavers, almost lets the cows be, but in the end he rushes down, practically kicks the bewildered beasts to their feet, and beds them more quickly than they've ever been bedded before. Then he and Mickey watch from the front windows of the big house. About midnight, Glenn returns. Ron calls the police. Glenn puts his car in the garage, goes upstairs, gets into bed. The police arrive quickly. "What's the best way to take him?" they ask. "Every morning I call him about 4 o'clock, says Jim. "Well, call him." From the top of the stairs, Jim squeaks, "Glenn, time to get up." Glenn opens the door. Jim steps back. The police step forward, and it's all over. And that is the last any of them ever see of Glenn. They hear he's been committed to the state mental hospital at Mendota. Everyone is sorry, but they're glad he didn't shoot Daddy Dogan or anyone else. W.J. shakes his head. "Poor fellow," he says. Jim stays on the farm for another year. Then he leaves and goes to ag school. He marries and works as a farm manager on a succession of farms in distant states. He eventually becomes a supervisor for Carnation Milk. He keeps in touch through Christmas cards and an occasional letter. Some 20 years later, Jim is in the area and drives out to the farm. he finds Grandpa talking to Ronald in the barn. "Hello, Daddy," he writes on his pad. "I couldn't go by without saying hello to the baby's milkman." Grandpa and Ronald greet him warmly. They catch him up on some of the changes. The cows now almost entirely Holsteins. The improvements in the milk house. The growing hybrid seed corn business, with its buildings located at Ron's farm up the road. The Rock County Breeders Co-op. On the barn ramp, Jim says to Ronald, "Your father never preached to me. Yet working and living with him was like a sermon every day." He motions toward the Ames on the silo. "My first day here, I wondered if those words included me. I found out very soon they were meant for every person on the place. We were truly a family." Ron reminds him of the Glen Guile episode and spells to Grandpa. Jim grins wryly and writes, "Daddy, I have tended a number of herds since you taught me, and that was the only time in my life that I almost didn't put the cows to bed." Grandpa nods and nods over the message. His whole body shakes with silent laughter.